I can see that we're getting the slides up here, and it's great to be here with you. I understand that somebody here knew me 50 years ago. I'm not the same person that I was 50 years ago. So sorry about that. You know, you get older. Things change, but it's a wonderful joy to be here. And David brought me all the way out from Hollywood because he said he didn't want to go to Hollywood. He wanted me to come here to meet him, so I'm here to meet him. And I'm here to be a blessing to you. Now, most of what I say, most of the time, is good news. And I get asked to speak at conferences, and almost all the time, I'm going to be going to Concord, New Hampshire in about 2 weeks, and then I go to North Carolina, and then I go to Atlanta. And one group that I was speaking in Palm Desert said, they introduced me and they said, now we're going to hear about how horrible everything is in Hollywood. And I said, I don't do that. I do good news. Now, there's a reason that I do good news. One, that I came to Christ late in life, and you'll find out about that in a minute. But the second is that the church turned the Roman Empire up, right side up, through good news. They called it good news. That was the gospel. They were, when everybody else and the news media today, the way they addict people is telling you bad news. A couple of months ago in California, they kept saying there was a hurricane going to hit Los Angeles. Everybody was afraid. I try not to listen to the news, but nothing happened. In fact, it was so little that nobody noticed it. So, but the news works through fear. And the adversary works through fear. So I don't think we belong to that camp. I think we belong to the camp of the good news of Jesus Christ with the new covenant, and I think we're being blessed. And so we have to look at how are we going to redeem the media, and how are we redeeming the media, and what great things are happening. I grew up in the entertainment industry. My parents were stars. My father starred in 62 movies. One of those pictures was him receiving the box office award for being number one in the box office in 1936. He started in 1926. In 2 years, my family will have been in Hollywood for 100 years. So you can blame us for everything. It's all our fault. And I grew up as a left-wing commie pinko rat, just to put it salacious. My mother died when I was young. I did a lot of self-destructive behavior afterwards, because when you lose your mother when you're young, even people as famous as C.S. Lewis did that, it shatters your life. And then I looked for love in all the wrong places, which some people may know. And then I did a lot of drugs. And I did a phone conference about 2 years ago with one of my alma maters, Dartmouth, where I graduated summa cum laude, and I was talking about redeeming the media, and one of the men that was on there said, you threw this drug party at Dartmouth and you destroyed people's lives, and I repent. But there were my father, having lost my mother a long time when she was 52 and I was 13 going on 14, my father was being courted by a lot of women because he was a very handsome guy. And he'd been in the cavalry and he was just a terrific person. And these four women had come, very wealthy, come to Christ through the Billy Graham crusade in Manhattan. And nobody remembers that, but it was the miracle in the garden. There's a book out about it. A lot of people came to Christ. It was the most significant revival that they had in New York. Anybody remember the Billy Graham in the garden, 1957? No. Okay, well, I'll just go on. So these four women came to Christ, and one of them was single, and she decided that she wanted to, you know, hook up with my father, but she'd have to get him to be a Christian first. So she'd take him to Christian events. We went to a whole bunch of Christian events. He'd take me to protect him. I'd gone to NYU Law School. I graduated summa cum laude from Dartmouth. I went to University of Bordeaux in Toulouse. I went to University of Munich. I'm not going to tell you, I didn't go there. Academics were easy for me. That's why I did so well. But I actually went there looking for girls. So I'm sorry, Renee, that I didn't go as a serious student. My paper is still being used at Dartmouth, and it started a whole crusade there. So these four women would take my father would take me to protect him, and I'd walk out of these Christian events within about 15 minutes and say, these people are crazy. And then I became one and knew they were crazy. One woman, she said, you keep walking out of these events. Why don't you just read the Bible and tell me what's wrong with it? You've gone to all these schools, you know, you've got all these critical skills. You worked for, you know, the National Lawyers Guild, which was a communist organization and represented the Chicago Seven. Forgive me, please. God forgave me, so I hope you could forgive me. And I worked for the Natural Resources Council, again, a very left-wing organization. So I was given the task of reading the Bible, and I didn't want to do it. So I spent 6 months, my father would call me, and he'd say, have you read the Bible yet? I said, no, I don't want to read the Bible. Why don't you read the Bible? And he said, no, she asked you to read the Bible. So that went on for months, and then finally I started reading the Bible, and I said, I'll read the short part. You know, I guess that's the New Testament. And I started reading the short part, and the begats is what got me to come to Christ. Why would the begats get you to come to Christ? Because I always heard that it was a myth. And the begats said that here's a real person with a real genealogy, you know, in a real place in time and space. Fully man, fully God. It was real. It wasn't a myth. It was a story that was true, and you could verify it. So I came to Christ, and my life changed radically. I married my wife that God had introduced me to in a miraculous way, but I won't go into that, who died 2 years ago on May 5th, 2 years ago, and was my favorite person. And if you worked with us in New York 50 years ago, you remember my wife, Lily, who was there and was the genius in the family. And I decided that I needed to know more about the Bible and more about God. And so I went to a cemetery in New York. Oh, a seminary. I'm sorry. Most of them were dead. And in fact, there were a few people that had come from the streets of New York and had come to Christ in the Salvation Army that were studying at that seminary, who actually were the only people that were alive, because they'd come from the dark side. They knew what it was. There were a lot of people that just wanted to put on long robes and sit in the front of the church and look pretty. So, but the seminary had great theological teaching, and they owned, that denomination owned, the rights to the C.S. Lewis Chronicles of Narnia. Does anybody here remember the C.S. Lewis Chronicles of Narnia? Good. I'm not talking to some crowd that's too far away. Somebody else here knows me from Dalton from 1990. This is incredible. So they own those rights. Now, I'd grown up in the entertainment industry. My father starred in a lot of plays. He starred in Showboat the year I was born. He starred in Annie Mame. I had to do a lot of commercials and other stuff, because that's what you do when you're an actor's kid. You do all of that stuff. So they said, can you help us make The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe? So I was appointed as president of that denominational organization. At that time, many denominations were making television shows. The Lutherans made great shows. Shadowlands was made by another denomination. And we did The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. We got it on CBS television, and we had 37 million viewers, and we won an Emmy Award. And my father had won awards like the box office for all my life. And I said, I don't need to win an award. Before I came to Christ, I had, as an attorney, I had put together the funding for 5 feature films. One of them was Oliver Stone's first film. You don't know who Oliver Stone is, because none of you watch movies, but he's very famous. And it was a terrible film, so don't look it up on the internet. And now some of you are going to look it up on the internet. But we funded the film and some other films, and they did extremely well, but they were awful. And I said, how can I redeem the media? I had been redeemed. I had done these films. I had done a lot of other stuff. I said, how can we change the world? And making The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the Episcopal Radio TV Foundation was given the rights for that in 1954, and it took them 26 years to get it on the air. The average movie in Hollywood, according to the Hollywood Reporter and the LA Times, takes 13 years. And the average movie in Hollywood was $160 million. And Christian movies are being made for a couple of $1 million, but they don't make enough money. If a Christian movie makes $60-70 million at $10 a ticket, that's 7 million people in a country of 360 million people. Friends of mine in Hollywood are making movies that are making $1.4 billion. Chris Meledandri, who went to Dartmouth when he did Super Mario Brothers, and another friend of mine just did Dune. So I think we have to get to that level. But I said, I can't wait 26 years to make the next one of the Chronicles of Narnia. And so The Dawn Treader, which is the one we were going to go to next, or The Magician's Nephew. And so I said, how can we redeem the media? And I met the man who'd been head of the Protestant Film Office, George Heimrich. And he, and George, from 1933 to 1966, the church was the primary influence in Hollywood. So Hollywood had been very small. The European film industry was much bigger. Hollywood had been making some really bad movies. Hedy Lamarr's first movie had 13 minutes of sex and nudity in it in the 1920s. Barbara Stanwyck's first movie, as she was 13 years old, playing a 9-year-old, her father, Edward G. Robinson, was prostituting her to pay his gambling debts. And the three churchmen, Daniel Day Lord, Martin Quigley, and Joseph Breen, changed the whole industry. The industry was doing badly. He said, how many empty seats do you want in the church? No, I mean in the theater. And they showed him that, look, you've got the church. It's much bigger than your audience for movies. If you want to get them to come, you've got to do movies that are acceptable. They had no censorship powers. But as a result of the Catholic Legion of Decency, the Protestant Film Office, and Jewish Defense League, you know, Mr. Smith went to Washington. It was a wonderful life, and the bells of St. Mary rang out across the land. And from 1933 to 1965, movies were wholesome. You could take your kids to any movie. And that was because of the church. And the church worked with producers. I've got the files from the Protestant Film Office. This is a picture of George Heimrich, who's in the middle with Cecil B. DeMille. Cecil B. DeMille's secretary has been to my house. I've got the book where everybody, all the theologians, he got lots of theologians to participate. We've been working with movies for a long time. We worked on Jesus of Nazareth. We worked on the Jesus film. There are a lot of those films that had serious theological problems that we had to come in and fix. Jesus of Nazareth, which many people love, had no resurrection in it. And Bill Bright, who you remember Bill Bright, he was going to boycott it, and they panicked. So I went over and worked on the film and added a resurrection scene from found footage. But we changed a lot of things. And then in the 1960s, the church film office closed. The head of Paramount Pictures said, if you take the salt from the meat's going to rot. And within 3 years, the meat rotted. Not because, you know, pagans will be pagans unless Christians are Christians. If we abandon a territory, I've been all over the world preaching and teaching. Sri Lanka in the 1950s, the church, 90% of Sri Lanka was churched. The people left, the heads of the churches. They abandoned the churches. Within a couple of years, it went back to the fights between the Tamils and the Sinhalese, between the Buddhists and the Hindus. They've killed hundreds of thousands of each other because the church left. Pagans will be pagans unless Christians go into all the world to take every thought captive for Jesus Christ. So in 1965, you had such wonderful movies as The Sound of Music. Anybody have seen The Sound of Music here? Anybody like The Sound of Music? You had The Greatest Story Ever Told. You had beautiful movies being made. And the movies were getting 44 million weekly attendance at the box office. And 100% of the movies would have been rated G-rated. Within 3 years after the church left, in 1968, you went to 17 million people going to the movie theaters. It's never gone back to that 44 million. TV came around in the late 40s. Videotapes came around in the late in the late 70s, the early 80s, there was nothing happening except you went from 100% G-rated to 80% R-rated. And every year I give this story to Hollywood people. I said, if you're going to restrict the audience, you're going to have less audience. And the industry almost went bankrupt. So we decided, how do you redeem the media? What we do is look at 100% of the movies that open, make $750,000 or more. And we look at, in terms of criteria that people, like Ben was talking about outside, we look in terms of emotion, philosophy. But the most important quality is the ontology. And I was trying to explain this to Hollywood at our last big event on February 9th, because somebody else, Variety, was doing a thing about religion in Hollywood and put on Hindus and other people. And I said, look, all over the world, Christian movies do better. Did you know that? 70% of the, I'll show you some figures, 70% of the top grossing films had strong moral biblical bases. In Saudi Arabia, The Passion of the Christ did more per capita than it did in America. And most of that is based on the ontology. If you're a Muslim, you're an ontological materialist, so if somebody dies, it doesn't matter. It's just death. If you're a Marxist, it really doesn't matter. You can go kill people in the Ukraine and it doesn't matter at all. They're just fertilizer. If you're an ontological nominalist, which my parents were when I was young, then you believe that everything is just an illusion. And if everything is just illusion, if somebody dies, it doesn't matter. So when Mother Teresa was picking up the people on the streets of Calcutta, they tried to kill her in 1948, put her on a funeral pyre, because they said these people are not real. By picking them up and taking care of them and reviving them, she was proving that their ontology was wrong. So movies at the heart cannot just be movies that say, this is, you know, mention Jesus. It's got to be a movie that's ontological realism, epistemological realism, and we can go into all that, but I won't. But after I was head of a department at Berkeley, which is a small school in Northern California, I used to show them this chart. Great movies are great stories well told. Everybody at Berkeley thought they could tell great stories. Very few people can tell great stories. I teach people how to tell great stories. They have a positive worldview. My wife was on chemo drugs and therapy for 26 years. And Christians love to make hospital films. And I'd have to review them. And she'd say, I hate hospital films, because she'd have to go to hospitals. Why are we making depressing hospital films? Anybody ever thought about that? It's depressing, and they don't get a big audience. So what are you doing making a depressing film? So anyway, and they have a positive worldview and are spiritually uplifting. Even Superman went into a little Lutheran church to learn that he had to take a leap of faith. So you see movies with very interesting inserts of biblical pattern. Of the movies last year, what did they make? The movies with CCC. C is a little bit of Christianity. CCC is a lot of Christianity. Average $33 million per movie. Romance, average $21 million. And I'm talking about Rousseauian romantic. Pagan, $16 million. False religion, $6 million. Humanist, $5 million. Humanism is Marxism. And occult, $1.8 million. So I show these figures to Hollywood. The man who just got appointed to be the head of Netflix in production is a Christian who came to the gala several times and spoke at Biola, the Bible Institute of Los Angeles, because they need an audience. You'll see that in a second. Top 10 movies, 70% had strong redemptive, which is our word for Christian when we're talking to Hollywood, biblical and morally uplifting content. And the top 10 movies overseas, only 10% were rated R. You know, most countries do not want R-rated films. China won't let them in. Muslim countries won't let them in. I think the only place they do well is France and Denmark, but that's, you know, about it. Sorry. Maybe Quebec. And of the top 25 movies, only the little last 4% had any graphic sexual content, because people don't want that. Why are these figures the way they are? It's not because of Hollywood. It's because when people go to the box office, they're voting. If you vote for a good film, there'll be more good films. If you vote for a bad film, which people call me up and say, oh, I just saw this worst film I've ever seen, you don't have to go see that film, Poor Things or whatever. You have to vote for the good, for there to be more good. Because the people who are making the bad can't continue to spend that amount of money. When your film costs $160 million, you have to do 2.5 times negative cross to break even. That means you have to do $500 million to break even. You don't care about that, but it does make a difference. And you're not going to do $500 million without the church. So of the top 25 movies in 2023, 6 were among Movie Guide Best Movies for Families or Mature Audiences. Most of the people who made them are good friends. I can explain, like Spider-Man. He's willing to risk his life and his career to go save his family. If you saw some of these films, one of them is about the devil trying to steal heaven and trying to marry the princess. And he's even got a lake of fire, and he's suspending people above the lake of fire. The man who made it is a good friend of mine. So there's a lot of interesting stuff. And the reason they're making that is every week, now this is down. Christians love to be negative, so I'll be negative for a second. About when we started doing this in 1990, the number of Christians, people going to church every week was about 160 million. Now it's 110 million. So we should all sit here and, you know, get really depressed about that. But the truth of the matter is, we're much bigger than the box office. And they make movies for different people groups. They make movies, my wife was Argentine, for Spanish-speaking groups. They make movies for African-American groups. They make movies. So what I tell them is, this is a gigantic people group. And if you want to get them, you've got to reach them through movies and entertainment that they're going to appreciate. And, you know, for many times, I would go into a church like this in Dalton or someplace else, and I'd ask the people whether they'd seen a movie. Oh, we don't go to movies. So, but then I'd say, you know, have you seen Dune? And a lot of people would say yes. Have you seen, you know, Super Mario Brothers? A lot of people would say yes. But they didn't go to movies. But these movies were not on streaming yet, so they must have seen them somewhere. But the truth of the matter is, according to Barna, that the average Christian buys more movie tickets per year than non-Christians. Okay? The most powerful person in Hollywood is between 14 and 24. Our audience for Movie Guide is about 89 million people. It's up from 37 million people before COVID. Those 89 million people, there are a lot of kids in that group. When we do videos, like I did my testimony as a video, 90% of them were young men under 30. And 60% of them came to Christ. And I hear people all the time saying, we can't reach the kids. Probably because you're not speaking to them in a way that they understand. You're not speaking to them in terms of the culture that they live in. We can reach the kids. And we know what they're doing. There's more at stake than profits. As I said, when I was head of the TV Center at City University in New York in the late 70s, before we did Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe on CBS television, I was supporting myself by being head of this department, City University, a small university of 210,000 students at that time. It's much more now. And there were about 50,000 students in TV. We got 62 professors together and developed the first media literacy course. And to look at the impact of media, Michael, my friend who's here, probably my best friend, said that one of the people here in Nashville says the media doesn't have an influence. There have been over 1 million studies on the influence of the media. We know how, when, where, and why it influences different people. About 7 to 11 or 12% of the young men want to copy the violence. I can give you a lot of examples of that. They walk out of a movie like New Jack City and there were 30 or plus stabbings and shootings and killings. And about 30% want to copy the sex. Now, what that means, if you're not part of the 7% that want to copy the violence, you're part of the 93 that don't, you say this has no influence. And if you're part of the 30% that aren't caring about the sex, then you say it has no influence. But a lot of people do. We call it, in psychology, we call it mainlining. That's their propensity. And the most concerned about the media being detrimental to values are the most educated, which is one of the reasons I was elected the head of the department at Berkeley, which is a small school in California. By the time a child is 17 years old, they spend 66,000 hours. When I started doing this report in 1992, children were only spending between 17 years old, up to 17, they were only doing 44,000 hours. I don't know how they can do 66,000 hours. That means they're looking at a movie, they're looking at their iPhone, they're looking at their computer, and they're pretending to do their homework. They spend 11,000 hours in school. They spend 2,000 hours with their parents because the economy is such that most families, both parents have to work. It's a terrible thing that we've imposed on them through moving in a socialist direction, which some of you understand what I'm saying. And they spend 800 hours to church. If that child goes to church every week from the moment they're born. So in other words, who has control of the psychology and the knowledge and the understanding? Who is reaching those children? It's not the church. The media becomes your church. The media becomes your school. One of my professors at UC Berkeley, was so fed up with the kids looking at their phones and everything else, he just turned on the TV and left the room. Because how can you teach when people aren't paying attention? We're competing with a Goliath. But the good news is that we're David. Now, 66, you know, most people talk about violence. 66% of the young girls feel worse about themselves when seeing models and celebrities on TV. And I have a little videotape that I'm not going to show of models and celebrities who are beautiful, afraid that other models and celebrities look better than they are, and they're depressed. And they want to, you know, get rid of themselves, whatever. So the media creates this myth. God says that each and every one of you is beautiful. He created you special and beautiful. You don't have to look like Margot Kidder or Margot Robbie or whoever it happens to be. So 66% of the girls, and the FBI says that when you feel low self-esteem, girls get into trouble. They get attracted to the wrong people, they do the wrong things, and the FBI will look at Disneyland where there's a lot of, you know, trafficking, as if you didn't know that. And they'll go up to a girl who's alone and they'll look her in the eye. If she doesn't look in the eye, she's probably low self-esteem and she's susceptible. So this is important. And according to Cornell University, not Dartmouth, 90% of the young people are abandoning their parents' values, which means the church. How many young people do we have in here tonight? The media is seducing them away from the church. So the solution starts with you. Number one, we need to redeem the media, which we've been doing. When we started, there was only one movie with positive Christian content, Trip to Bountiful, in 1985 when we started Movie Guide. Now it's, you know, hundreds of movies with positive Christian content. And now the head of Netflix is going to be a strong Christian, and they're going to move in that whole direction. So we see a lot of changes. Tomorrow night, I'm going to an opening, a premiere, to do a red carpet for Unsung Heroes, which is the story of the group that did God and Country, which is very famous if you're young. And the next thing we need to do is media wisdom. To teach our children to be media wise. I have 18 grandchildren. I know how to teach children how to be media wise. We developed the first media literacy course. I've got a book out there called Media Wisdom. It teaches you. One person here in Nashville in the medical community, I was used to consult. Remember, my wife was on chemotherapy for 26 years. I'd call once a month, and she said, she sounded bad, and I said, what's wrong? She said, my daughter is cutting. Are you here by any chance? You could tell the story. No. She lives near here. I'm sorry she didn't come. Her daughter was cutting. So I said, I'm sending you my book. I have a chapter on that stage of cognitive development, which is the self-esteem stage of cognitive development. It goes through all the details. Let your daughter read it. Her daughter, who is 15, read the chapter, stopped cutting, came to Christ, and now goes to her high school and counsels her friends. One chapter in one book. We know how to solve this problem. When I go speak in Korea, you know, they fill up a baseball stadium. When I go speak in the Philippines, they had 60,000 people. You go speak in America, and here you are. And that's because most people don't realize that they're being boiled to death. They think they're in a hot tub having a great time. This is a very serious issue. You have to teach the kids meaty wisdom. So you have to influence the most powerful person in Hollywood, the most powerful person who goes to movies. Why would the 14 to 24 or 30-year-old go to movies instead of staying home and seeing it on the wonderful entertainment system that his parents bought? Because he has a date, or she has a date, and she doesn't want her parents to be there for the date, and you can go into a dark theater and hold each other's hands and you don't have to talk, and then afterwards you can go get ice cream and talk about the movie, which is really a way of talking about your relationship, but it's all guarded in the terms of the movie. But they make up the gigantic audience for movies. So if you want to change the industry, you've got to change your grandchildren. Let me go back. Learn how to protect your children. There are keys of media wisdom. I don't know if I should go through this. You have to understand the influence of the media, understand the children's stages of cognitive development, understand the grammar. I've taught this for so many years. Understand your moral, spiritual values, which you think would be easy, but a lot of people don't know how to teach them to their children. Understand the answers, asking the right questions. All of this is important. And these lessons can be applied to movies, television, video games, and you can rescue your children and grandchildren. I don't know if anybody, most churches when I talk to, there are a lot of people who say, I'm having trouble with my grandchildren. Most churches have problems in their family that are just terrible. My friend who's here, my best friend, had a disaster in his family. We're not beyond that, but we know the solution. So why aren't we doing it? So I'll skip over the next slide because I've got to get moving. That's the testimony about the woman in Nashville. More parents, according to the Hollywood Reporter, use Movie Guide than any other guide because we look at movies in terms of 150 criteria and we help you understand what's good, what's bad, and we let you be the judge. We don't tell you to go or not go like a lot of services. We tell you this is what's in there, now you be the judge. You understand what's in there. And there's a lot of movies that you need to understand. And our audience grew to over 89 million people, which I know is not much in a country of 360 million people, but it's pretty significant that it grew in 3 years before COVID, 37 million to 89 million people. Because we need to reach 89 million people. We need to disciple them. We need to teach them media wisdom, right? Does anybody agree? Does anybody think this is good news? Because we're always talking in the church that we can't reach them, but we're reaching them. I think it's good news. I'm sorry. Influence producers. The second half is to influence Hollywood. The Movie Guide Awards Gala. Anybody here been to the gala beside, you know, Michael in the back? Report to the entertainment industry. I brought some for you. Personal meeting with executives. We do that all the time. Last week, one of the biggest producers and writers in Hollywood who starred in Glee, which I know you don't like. But he is an avid Christian, and he's doing Christian movies, and we have a lot of people come to the gala who become strong Christians. We have Muslims, communists, Jews, atheists come to the gala and become Christians. One of them you might know. His name is Carlos Norris, Chuck Norris. He grew up on the wrong side of the tracks, Carlos did. He went into the army with his brother, who's a really nice guy. He went overseas in Korea. He learned martial arts. He became a very strong New Ager. When he came to the gala, because one of his television programs had a lot of Christian content, that was due to his brother. He was living with Gina, who's a good friend of ours. And he came to Christ. Isn't that what you want? We look at the movies and we see the ontology, the epistemology, the semantics, the syntactics. We invite them to come to the gala and we see them transformed. So now he's a right-wing fundamentalist fanatic. But so am I, so it doesn't matter. The next one, Ken, is going to be the slide with sound. And what do I have to do here?
That's on. Good.
MovieGuide.org. You do some pretty interesting and valuable work in Hollywood.
It's the largest faith and values award show in the country.
And our acceptance on it from Paramount and Miramax.
On behalf of DreamWorks, Fox, and Steven Spielberg, I'd like to thank MovieGuide for this acknowledgement.
He makes it easier for us to stand for what we believe. I'm really living proof that his organization impacts us.
It's just wonderful that MovieGuide and Ted are doing this because it gives real validation to companies like ours and movies like these. And with events like this, I think they get the recognition that they need to keep going and for more to be made.
God. They did studies, and he talks about Blatt, the founder of these awards. The fact that the faith movies actually do better financially at the box office, not just faith, but family.
The less sex you put in the movie, the more money it makes. The less violence you put in, the more profitable it is.
Dolly Parton.
Hello, this is Patrick Warburton.
Hi, this is Dennis Haysbert.
Hi, this is David Alan Grant.
I'm James Marsden.
Hey, this is Alex Kendrick.
Hi, I'm Kaylee Cuoco.
You are watching Movie Guy.
You are watching Movie Guy.
So we teach kids. We have a program called The Inklings, which, thanks to Michael, is fully funded. And we take the best and the brightest and teach them how to become executives in Hollywood. That's a line from Plato, civilization that forgets how to tell its story dies. We were dying, the church. We forgot how to tell our story in the media. We're learning. I teach people how to succeed in Hollywood and out here. It's got chapters that are contributed by the former head of Disney. I don't care who the person is. They've succeeded. And as Adam Smith said, if you want to succeed, you look at what succeeds. You don't look at what fails. Right? If you want to succeed, you say, why did it succeed and how can I incorporate that into my life? So, dramatic storytelling, I teach it. The premise, where you're going, plot, how you get there, character, who goes there, themes.
I have found over many years of experience in working with writers that the biggest mark of an amateur is the inability to take criticism. Now, it's certainly understandable why somebody would not want to hear that criticism. They have put their heart and soul into that script. And in many ways, what is in that script is laying themselves bare for the public. And this is a scary thing. And so if somebody doesn't like your script, they don't like you. But That is not the way to become a great writer. You have to be able to listen to criticism.
Okay, great movies have classic structure, plot first, characters, dialogue, idea, music, spectacle. You know, Peter Jackson, who made Lord of the Rings, we were sitting, he released King Kong, his version of King Kong, the third King Kong. It bombed at the box office. And my students at Berkeley said if it had one more fight between King Kong and some other dinosaur, he was going to leave the theater. So I talked to Peter because we were both at the buffet because we both liked food better than going in and watching the movie. And Peter was saying, yeah, this was my idea. But spectacle does not attract an audience. Music, there have been movies about Bob Dylan bombed at the box office. Idea, that's what most Christians do. They do movies with ideas, but they don't do well at the box office. They get boring. Dialogue, my dinner with Andre. Characters, Bergman, one of the great filmmakers, made Cerebon. It made under $100,000 at the box office. That $10 a ticket, that's nobody. Probably my class at Berkeley. It's all about the plot and how to create the plot. And the key to doing this is talent and humility and to prove the premise.
What this scene is doing, and it did in the book, is it's fundamentally making a promise. It's making a promise to you that this story will lead somewhere that's worth your time. And that's what all good stories should do at the beginning, is they should give you a promise. You could do it an infinite amount of ways. And sometimes it's as simple as once upon a time. A well-told promise is like a pebble being pulled back in a slingshot and propels you forward through the story to the end.
Anyway, all of you are not going to go running out and make a script, but this is the classic story formula. In the Bible, Jesus gives us the same formula. He tells us where he's going. He gives the promise. He leads people through to understand. He took the 12 aside and told them, listen, we're going up to Jerusalem. Everything that is written through the prophets about the Son of Man will be accomplished. For he'll be handed over to the Gentiles. He'll be mocked, insulted, spit on, and after they flog him, they'll kill him. And he will rise on the third day. That's the promise. And we teach people how to do this. We had the next slide. I'm not going to play it. But we had the best movie 3 years ago on Netflix. Number one on Netflix for 9 weeks. Unheard of. I looked at my team, said, you got to watch it. I watched it, and I got to the producer, and the producer had taken my class in 2015, and now he was head of a division of a major studio. There are only four major studios. That's a pretty good career. Another man who, I have a little video from that I'm not going to bore you with. He was working on a plot and a story for 18 years in Florida, and he never got anywhere. So he finally, every year I'd say, you got to take the class. You got to know how to do it. So he took the class. He rewrote his script. We looked at the script. He rewrote it. 2 months later, Ron Howard gave him a two-picture deal, the big, rich two-picture deal from Hollywood. Ron Howard is a very big name. And he made the first movie last year, released on MGM Plus, and it was number one on MGM Plus. For 18 years, he was wasting his time. I see some Christian movies, and I say, have you ever studied filmmaking? Oh, no, we downloaded it from God. So God is a bad filmmaker? God can't tell a story? Jesus didn't tell parables? Are you blaming God that you didn't make a good movie? It's a craft. You have to learn the craft. Now, none of you want to do that, so I'm in far, far away from your world here. You have to make the story painful. Snakes! Why did it have to be snakes? Says Indiana Jones, where he finds them, must descend into a pit of slithering reptiles. But we know why it had to be snakes. Because we find out early in the film that Indiana Jones hates snakes. There's a pattern. There's a procedure. There's a way to write movies. And then we do this course in Hollywood. It's full already for June. We'll have another one maybe next year. I don't know. But here it is.
I want to thank you, Caleb. You're the connector of our industry. You bring everybody together, and especially the part of the industry that really matters, part of the industry that is really serving the Lord and also just providing all of the families out there the content that they know they can trust. And, you know, Movie Guide tells you what you should be watching, but the thing is you actually have to have the content to watch. Thank you, everyone, because you're creating that content. And it's really important. Without the content, we don't have an industry.
You guys have just refreshed my soul, coming back to some of my old stomping grounds. It's been just amazing. And you've been so helpful. So helpful. And you've encouraged me, and I hope in some form I've encouraged y'all.
Meeting all the people here is everyone is unique and have different skills and wisdom, and I feel like, you know, I've just met a bunch of people that I can help, and they can help me, and can always remember that I can reach out to this person.
Don't forget Psalm 96:3. God said, publish, write, do my work, tell the world about me.
Anyway, the two key teachers there, one was the head of the major, biggest movie studio, and the other one was the head of another division of his movie studio. So we're actually getting very successful people. In the next class, I've asked the producer of Dune, one of the owners of the largest studios, to come and teach. He's also done silly movies like Godzilla vs. Kong. Anybody see Godzilla vs. Kong? Okay. Did you notice that it quoted the Bible three times? The book of Ruth. I will go where you go. I will not leave you. That's because we work with this guy. He comes and teaches our class. He was living with a woman. He's gotten married. His life has turned around. I hope you like this because I think it's good news. So God came in the flesh that you might have life and have it abundantly. Everybody in my family, all the 18 grandkids, are gifts from God. And Hollywood impacts your church. Now your church can impact Hollywood. Teach your family to be culture-wise. We have the tools. I've written 42 books. Become informed. Spend your money wisely. In other words, every time you go in entertainment or every time you watch a program, you are actually voting for the program. Don't vote for the bad. Vote for the good. Support what we're doing in Hollywood and come to the Movie Guy Gala. Actually, we're taking less and less people. And all of you know, because this is a very astute theological group, the story of Telemachus, right? Ronald Reagan's favorite story. You don't remember Telemachus? Okay. It's a great story. Anyway, the Roman Games, which went on for almost 1,000 years, were very entertaining. The first part of the game, you kill animals. They killed so many animals that whole species disappeared. Species that you read in the Bible that occurred in the Middle East were gone because they were killing them, the gladiators, in the games. The games went all the way from Spain all the way to India throughout the Roman Empire, through all of North Africa. The second part was gladiators killing each other, and the third part was killing unwanted people groups. When Pontius Pilate came to Israel, He threw games for the first week to celebrate 62,000 Jews were killed. It was fun. So one man, a Christian, who lived on the edge of the Roman Empire in Danubia, walked all the way, an old man, one of you could have been, walked all the way to Rome, called by God, went to the Colosseum, sat in the chief seats, which were the top of the Colosseum, and he saw the killing, and he said, "Stop in the name of Christ." And they didn't stop, so he jumped into the arena. Those walls were high enough that the lions and the other animals would not jump the walls. And he yelled, "Stop in the name of Christ." And everybody said, "Boo!" And they killed him. The gladiator ran him through. And as he was dying, Telemachus looked at the emperor Honorius, very famous. He was in Gladiator. I don't think he made it that long, but he was the emperor in Gladiator. Wicked man. And said, "Stop in the name of Christ." And Honorius stopped the games for the first time in 1,000 years. All the way from Spain to India, through North Africa, all the way through Europe. One man jumped in the arena. You know, a lot of us are hanging around the church, Christians. We don't jump into the arena. We complain about the society. We think it's awful. But if you care about your children or grandchildren, you're going to jump into the arena and make a difference because you love them. I've got 18 grandchildren that I love. I'm 77 years old. I have the normal problems that everybody has. I had Bell palsy last year. I've got a frozen nerve on top of my head now. I'm taking, you know, Lyrica. I didn't think I could speak tonight. But I'm here because I care about the children and the grandchildren. And as long as I'm alive, I'm going to jump into the arena to make a difference for Jesus Christ. God bless you and have a wonderful evening. Ask questions. And if you don't want to ask questions, I'm going to take David and take him to dinner. Hold on, I got to hear you. I have hearing aids and they're not that good.
So, if I can real quick.
Yeah. Yeah. Come on, speak into the microphone. The microphone is working, so you can speak right here.
Is that one working right there?
That.
All right, first, Dr. Baer, thank you so much for being here, sir.
God
bless you. I appreciate that. I'm David Leon. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Some of you know me, some of you don't. I just flew in. I couldn't change. I apologize for that, folks. I asked Dr. Baer to be here tonight. We are as you know, PTI, feel good to see you again, sir. PTI, Providence Theological Institute, we're about content creation. At one time, we were a seminary. We became an online seminary. We moved into becoming a content creator. The purpose of John Bunyan Conference and why we sponsor this conference is to create content. Content that lasts as long as media lasts. Everything we do gets written down, gets recorded, gets disseminated for free if we can help it, all around the world. And I just thought, what better way to get back to what we do as an institute than have somebody who every day wakes up in Hollywood and thinks, how can I promote Christ within media? And that's also what we're doing. Now, our lens is New Covenant Theology. And that's sort of what our view of this world. And we create content and new covenant theology. But folks, if we are not relating to the world at large, we're going nowhere. It's not going to matter. So I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
And kind of showing, you know, if we're interested, for folks who are in here, and a lot of your pastors, if you're here and you're interested in how can I do something within the media, this guy's got it down. He's got some books back there. He's got some courses over here, right? If you have people in your congregation that want to do movies or be in movies, call me. Right? I mean, he's here. He's ready to help. He's got a succession plan in place. That's why you're here.
Thank you.
I'm glad you're here.
I am too.
So he's going to